Accession number 14974, Paul Armstrong, reel 16.
Mr. P. Armstrong, reel 16. You were saying, Mr. Armstrong, that you had missed out going to the depot before you went on to claims. What happened there?
This was rather unusual in that the commander of the depot was Colonel Jock Hasted, who'd been in the 2nd Durham Light Infantry. And when I arrived at the depot, expecting immediate posting, he said to me he needed someone from the regular unit to smarten up the troops that were going through the depot. At that time, the depot had really increased astonishingly from when I saw it. There was huts for the men that had been built. There was a large parade ground. There were, even at that stage, there were ATS staff personnel fully employed under a senior ATS officer. I was a little taken aback, being ex-territorial, and obviously accepted as a 2nd Durham Light Infantryman, which I suppose did a lot to my self-esteem. But on the first parade, when I saw the state of the troops, when I say the state, I mean the discipline. They were perfectly well dressed, but they were the most utter shambles I had seen in many a long time. And I called the sub-major to me and told him to dismiss the men and re-parade them in 10 minutes properly dressed. He did as I asked and then came to ask me what I meant. And I pointed out that in the Durham Light Infantry it was the rule, the regulation, to have the cap badge in the centre of the forehead. That gaiters had to be worn correctly, battle dress had to be fastened, and various other things I'd noticed. And they came back in 10 minutes. I began to inspect them, found so much. The rifles were filthy. Everything that I had been used to in the 2nd Durhams was absent. And so I made Sergeant Major dismiss the parade again, and I said I would re-inspect them at 5 o'clock that night, and then left them. I went to see the colonel and I told him what I'd done for his approval, and he said, whatever you do, I want these troops to leave here a credit to the regiment. We had a little bit of muttering in the ranks, particularly when the next parade I made them all sit, remove the right boot and examine the socks. And this caused a little bit of upset. But eventually, during the month I was there, I could feel that the troops really did feel that they were soldiers and not cripples.
Colonel Halstead had a rather unfortunate end.
Well, he was an amazing man. I personally found him the right type of officer that I come to expect from the regular army. And in fact, one little incident will show you what I mean. One of the soldiers, for some reason or other, barricaded himself in the armory and threatened to shoot anyone that came. And a sergeant major went to remonstrate with him, and he shot and put a bullet into the wall, actually, by the side. The sergeant major is a warning that he had to be taken seriously. Of course, there was consternation in the camp. And I understand, I wasn't there, but I understand that they went to the colonel to see what they should do about it. And he put his hat on, walked up to the armory, walked inside and said, come, mention this chap's name. This is rather stupid. Let's go and talk it over. And the man put his rifle down and the colonel led him out. That shows what I think was a key to his character. I understand that he was suffering very, very acutely from a cancer. And he put all his papers in order, he brought all the events up to date, and unfortunately shot himself. A sad loss to the regiment.
Can we now go back to the time that you were claims officer?
Yes, yes.
You said that you had to inspect the various types of damage. Was there some form of scale per particular item of damage, something for a hole in the wall or something for a knock damaged?
Yes, there was a rough scale, but we in Claims Commission were all previously connected with property. And obviously we were used to having, for instance, we managed houses and having repairs carried out, and we knew what the costs normally were. But in wartime, things were slightly different in that there was a cost-plus agreement made with the builders, who obviously were in short supply. This was arranged through the property agency of the army, and we personally had nothing to do with actual cash. Our job was to make the inspections, write out the forms detailing the damage that had been done, the regiment that was in it, and we put that up to the property department, who assessed it and paid it. It was very difficult because I mentioned previously the matter of the 6-inch nail holes in the walls, but there were really acute cases of very serious damage. And a rather amusing incident happened to me. When I was with the Durham Light, the 2nd Durhams on the coast, to be in position for a possible invasion, I had a caravan removed to the front. Fortunately, I hadn't signed any order or given any personal instructions, because the very first claim that I was asked to report on was the removal of a caravan from a caravan park to the front, and taken over by the army in 1941. This, I think, was the perverted sense of humour of the commanding officer of this unit, but at least it showed me what the feelings of the person whose caravan had been removed must have been.
Did it lead to a great deal of negotiation, obviously, between what the owner thought he should be getting and what the army were willing to pay?
I don't think so, because it's the crown that they're dealing with, and when anyone is dealing with the crown or any crown properties, life isn't very easy for the person who is in opposition. It's improved lately, but in those days there was an assessment made. It's similar to the Inland Revenue valuation. I had many battles with the Inland Revenue, but all in all, they were fair men. And this, during wartime, there were appeals, naturally, against it. And I think it was generally sorted out. I was glad in many cases that I hadn't to adjudicate, because, for instance, an example, I had to examine the home of Lord Gort, the commander-in-chief. This was a very, very difficult job. I found considerable anxiety that day. Other jobs, I did various castles and halls belonging to landed gentry. I remember one Pemberton Hall, which is now an hotel, the Ramsside Hotel. I went to see that, and the sole occupant of this very large hall was one little old lady, Miss Pemberton. And I apologised and said this was a problem. And she said, "Oh, no, no, as far as I'm concerned, the sooner I can get out of this place, the better." She said, "You feel free to do whatever you wish." And I found she was living in three rooms at the end of the hall. The services had the rest.
This was Ramsside Hall, Durham.
That's right, Ramsside Hall, Durham.
If a unit had particularly damaged property, could that unit be charged?
Oh, yes. This happened once or twice. And my commanding officer was extremely helpful as far as I was concerned. He told me from the start that if I had the slightest problem, I had to ring him. And there was one particular unit I can remember where the colonel, the second in command, the adjutant, two company commanders and the quartermaster had all been posted to other battalions of that unit. And the acting colonel and the acting second in command and the acting everything else were quietly hoping to stay there and have their temporary rank confirmed. They were extremely difficult. They put every obstacle they could in my way. They would not cooperate. They gave me no facilities for doing anything. And at the end of the day, I rang my colonel and told him the problems I was having, and he said, "Well, it's too late today, but meet me there at 9 o'clock the following morning." He turned up with two senior officers from the Claims Commission and two or three of the other ranks that helped us in various, well, drivers and the rest of it. And they made a complete and thorough examination of all the properties of this battalion. It finished up by the colonel was reduced to captain. The two majors were reduced to captain. The various and a very heavy fine was made on the regiment.
And this was because of damage that had happened under their
damage that
control.
Had happened, and they were. They'd completely lost control of the battalion, and they were just literally sweating out the time, hoping they wouldn't be posted anywhere until they were confirmed in the higher ranks.
Do you recall which unit
it was? No. No. I would rather not. I had a brush with other units who, for instance, I think the most amusing was the Fife and Former Yeomanry, the Fife and Former's very, very exalted regiment, and they thought it was terribly, terribly wrong of the War Office to send an officer to examine their accommodation. Fortunately, when they saw I was still wearing the badge of the Durham Light Infantry, who they'd served with in the BF, they proved a little bit more amenable than I expected.
So in this section you retained your own regimental contact and badges and
That's right. Until I was going to be transferred to the RE, this was an extra regimental job that I was posted to.
How long were you doing this work?
2 months. That was all. No, sorry. I beg your pardon. It was 6 months, at least, a good 6 months, because I was then transferred to the RE at Vista.
How did you feel doing this work for 6 months? Were you chafing to get out of it?
I didn't care for it.
Had you hoped to retain your Durham Light Infantry?
No, I'd already had an interview at War Office. At this time, the War Office were trying to sort people out. Some people had been there, felt could have been more use. And for instance, I was going to be posted to the Middle East as a camouflage officer because of my previous civilian experiences. And at the time, I was interviewed by Max Aitken, Lord Beaverbrook's son, and he said to me, well, I've seen you rather too late to send you to this camouflage job, but I think you should be transferred the RE. And like Colonel Ware, I said I was quite happy with the Durham Light Infantry, and he told me very, very rudely and very sharply that I would do as I was told.
So after 6 months, what date would this be then when you moved from the claims?
Early in 42. I think I'm right in saying it would be March 42.
Where did you go?
I was posted to preliminary, I was posted to a works unit in Bicester in Oxford, which was being made, a big amount, where a depot was being formed for ordnance. And it was to become a very large depot. And this unit was engaged in erecting hutting for the staff that were coming in, and buildings for the equipment. They were a rather interesting company. They were formed from a private firm of builders called Waits of London. The commanding officer and major was one of the Waits family, Alan. The the captain and the three subalterns were either office staff or senior clerks of works, I presume, of the, and then the rest of the rank and file, sergeants and downwards, and including the sappers and what would you, were all gangs of the workmen who'd been in the employ of the Waits organisation. They had been sent out to the BEF, and they told me that their first job was to lay out an airfield, which they had no idea of how to do, but they had picks, shovels and wheelbarrows.
This was in France?
This was in France. And when the German attack came, they were going to be used in the withdrawal, but it was then found that they hadn't fired the rifles that they'd been issued with at all. And therefore, some, I was going to say far-seeing, but some very sensible person ordered their withdrawal completely back to the UK. And they were just, in fact, they came back on by train, I believe they told me. And so they were very fortunate people indeed.
It was like a First World War PALS unit.
Yes.
With all one company.
Rather similar. Very, very hard working, kindly, nice people, keen, but so unmilitary it was quite frightening. And at that time I still hadn't changed my badge, so I found it a teeny little bit difficult. And in fact, the first week I was sitting in the mess, and The major and his four officers were sitting around looking very worried, and eventually I asked them what the trouble was, and they said, well, on Sunday, that was 48 hours later, there was a church parade, and there were going to be three of these units involved, but as Major Waits was a senior officer, he was to take charge of the parade, and it was to be a church, the usual type of church parade. I thought, to me, it was rather singular that there was any consternation, but eventually I discovered that they didn't know. Major Waits didn't know how to even give the orders to produce the church parade. It was to be Hollis Square. So we're all smokers then. You won't remember, but we're all smokers then. So I took a box of matches out of my pocket and laid them out on the table, laid them out to represent his company, and marched them along and giving the orders, which the officers were all writing down carefully, turning, then moving around so that each unit faced inwards, and this being the senior unit, obviously would be on the right of the line. And I thought they would go to the quarters that night and the next night, and hopefully on the Sunday they would carry this out. No such thing. On the Monday morning, Major Waits asked me if I would march immediately behind him and supplying with the necessary orders. I said, well, I'm badged as a Durham Light Infantryman. The Royal Engineers take precedence over an infantryman in a march. Oh, that doesn't matter in this case. This is necessary that you do it. So we carried out this parade. It worked all right, but I was shaken.
How was the works unit comprised? How was it made up?
In a similar sort of way from what an infantry unit was concerned, except that instead of weapons, they had equipment. They had bulldozers and a steamroller, various items of heavy equipment, and their name describes what they were, Artisan Works Company. So that you had a works section. Amongst these people weren't even organised, as I found later in the RE, because here we found the gangs were the same. You had a bricklayer and his mate, you had a joiner and his mate in a section. And then you had it so that they could take over, because at that time there were the labouring work was done by the Pioneer Corps, of which there were large numbers at Bicester. And although amongst them there were many men, very eminent men, I found talking to them that they were very, very senior. In fact, there was two professors I knew who insisted on working together so they could carry out their discussions on their previous life. I thought they would have taken this very badly, but they accepted the fact that they were German, they hadn't been naturalised, so that they'd been given the chance of going in the Pioneer Corps or being sent out to the Isle of Man. Obviously, they weren't the sort of workers we'd found our troops were, but they did a very, very necessary job.
What was your particular job with this works unit?
I think I was really supposed to be marking time until I was to be sent to the depot. They didn't know whether I was going to go to Chatham or to Aldershot. I honestly think that was the reason. And they sent me to Waits with his company, I think, just to help out on the discipline side.
So you, in effect, brought a bit of regimental element into the unit.
Yes. I remember once I was given a weekend pass, and coming back I found that I could, my train would just go as far as Buckingham, and that was 10 miles away, so I set off and walked from there to Bicester, and the parade was just forming up as I arrived, and the sergeant major was looking very, very agitated, and he saw me coming, and he looked across, and the chaps looked over, and they all started to cheer and say, "Oh, what did they call themselves? We're the light engineers."
What were
they were very, very cooperative chaps.
I was going to ask you, what were the attitude of these basically working men and a company in itself, I mean a civilian company in itself, to army life?
Their army life wasn't the sort of army life that they had in the infantry. I can say that right from the start. In the infantry, you've got a family of professional soldiers. In the Royal Engineers, you haven't got the same family feeling. It's no good saying otherwise. In peacetime, the regular army, yes, I expect that the companies are welded, but in wartime it wasn't that easy, because they're doing more individual jobs, and in the infantry you're working as a full team. In the engineers you might be sent off with a section of men and be completely detached, as I happened to be later many times. So a different attitude, a different type of service.
You were involved in the disciplinary aspect of the training, really. How did they take to that? Did they object to it?
At first they were a little bit touchy about it, but we were instructed to build a salt course for every regiment in the army at that time, and I constructed what I thought was a fairly simple assault course. But when these people started going through it, they were rather hopeless. And one of the things about an assault course is that you go through this assault course, and we've all seen them on the cinema, you go through this assault course, but at the end you advance with a rifle and bayonet. And in the infantry we used to have the men fire 5 rounds at a target, and woe betide the man that didn't produce a pretty respectable score. However, in this case they were very, very jiggered is the word I would have used, but you know what I mean. At the end they were completely finished, and in fact I was told by Major Waits that he considered the assault course was too hard. And I said, well, these men, I'm willing to stand at the end with my walking stick, and any of these men that wants to put his bayonet into me is welcome, if he can. This galvanized them a little. They went through fractionally better than they had, but when they got up to where I was standing, came along with the rifles, I just knocked the bayonets down, and I could have just knocked them on the head. So they then said that it was too hard. So I asked one of the objectors, which actually was the senior officer, not Major Waits, but his deputy, I said, "You stand there with the stick, and I'll go through and show you what should be done." So I, after being off for 6 months with Claims Commission, maybe I wasn't as fit as I had been, but I went through the assault course and then galloped up to our friend with my rifle and bayonet, and I could have happily killed him because he had no idea. This is the trouble. This is, they try to have men who are both soldiers and tradesmen, and it isn't very easy.